You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. Originally, I was going to focus this podcast solely on the idea of buyouts. It's something that I get asked about all the time. So I was going to explain buyouts and some of the potential candidates, and I am going to do that, probably an abridged version of it. But considering the news of the day, I wanted to give a very brief and tentative, focus on the word tentative, primer on what some of the early announcements regarding the new collective bargaining agreement are for the Warriors. So the basics at the outset is that while it hasn't been ratified by either side yet, the expectation is that the announced collective bargaining agreement, which I previewed a little bit on Tuesday's episode, that the structure of it is pretty much informed. And the big frustration probably for some Warriors fans with it is that some of the most important questions regarding the Warriors themselves are not yet definitive. However, we have some real inklings in terms of where this is going to go. And while I will get into the substance, I would say my current read is that it is overall good news for the Warriors, but there are a lot of very, very big pieces that we don't know yet. And the reason why I say it's good news for the Warriors is because the focus, and I made this the focus of the podcast I did before on this issue, is retaining Kevin Durant while retaining everyone else. And it sounds like there are not going to be any wholesale changes to the structure that would make that a lot harder. So reforming max salaries or anything crazy like that, that those sorts of things are not on the are not going to be a part of the table. So that's the good news. The bad news is ties in with something that I talked about as the most important issue regarding Durant, which was the amount of money he would potentially be sacrificing for 1 year to make this happen. And the estimate that I gave back when I wrote the piece for the Sporting News was a little less than $2 million, about $1.7 million if we want to get a little bit more specific on it. And so that is the difference between taking his full maximum on using salary cap space, which would require cutting Iguodala, or at least making them take a reduced salary with Iguodala, Livingston, whoever else, and being able to go stay over the cap and pay them. So that difference on the current estimate of the cap was $1.7 million. And it was a small detail in David Aldridge's piece on NBA.com, which you should definitely read if you're into this. But he mentioned that maximum salaries for a player with 10 or more years of experience, which Durant is going to be, this is his 10th year, will be $36 million. And that $36 million is higher than the $33.55 million, which was the estimate on the current cap. From what I can tell, and of course this isn't binding yet, and even the cap number that he might be basing that off is not binding yet, what I'm thinking he's getting at is that they're incorporating some new pieces of basketball-related income in, which will presumably raise the salary cap estimate. The league could also, if they wanted to, the league and the players could agree to having a fixed salary cap number for next year to not have it tie in the same way. That's a benefit of the year you negotiate the CBA. You can do whatever you want. They actually did that in the lockout year. They picked a number and that number was the salary cap for that year, and then they worked from that point. So that is a meaningful difference. So it goes from being about a $1.7 million gap to 4.15 about. And we don't know if there's more art than science in the Aldridge $36 million number, or maybe it's even something where that's tying in with some average salary or something like that. Maybe it's a little bit more loosey-goosey. And the more that overestimates the number, the closer it is to 35 or even lower, the better for the Warriors, because that would mean Durant is sacrificing less money. However, I would say overall that's good news, because while $4 million is a lot of money, Durant is seeing this year what the value of having players like Iguodala and Livingston is, and the reality that I laid out in the earlier podcast about how little money the Warriors would have to spend is probably enough. My instinct is to do that. It is in no way definite, because Durant can do whatever he wants. He is entitled to that. He can want what he wants. But it's a big enough difference in terms of team quality that my expectation is that he will be willing to sacrifice it. And as I said then, and it's very important to know, this is for 1 year. So it is not compounded over future years. And it doesn't sound like, from what I know, that the core structures of salaries, I talked about it with maxes, but everything else, is not going to be changed by this too much. So that would mean Durant could sign another for, so he would probably sign a 1-year deal, maybe a 1+1, meaning he has a player option, which he will almost definitely opt out of. Then he could either do that dance one more time, getting the 20% raise, or he could sign a longer term deal at that point, like what LeBron James did. LeBron signed for 2 years instead of one. So we'll see. But that's why overall it's good news for the Warriors on the Durant front. And I should also note that there is an outside chance that they could change the amount Durant would make on the non-Bird side. So if he stayed and they went over the cap, depending on how they want to change those calculations, they're raising salaries for a lot of other things. If they wanted to increase that potential, make it 130%, then that would fundamentally change the calculus for the Warriors as well. That would narrow the balance. We don't know that yet. It is not a yes or a no. We just do not know. So it could get a little bit better for the Warriors. It also could get worse if the cap estimate gets higher. But I would use $4 million or so as the general barometer now for that difference. And then now the big question is that difference big enough for Durant, or is it enough to stay? Other people have asked about the fundamentals of keeping this team together. That's a question I get asked a lot. And as a blanket statement, the answer is pretty much yes. They can keep this team together if they want. This Durant issue is the one that can do it. The challenge, as always, with any of these teams is ownership willing to pay it? And that is different from can. The can question is yes. The will question, I don't know. I'm not close enough to Joe Lacob or Peter Gruber to know the answer to that question. But can is more important to me, and the can is yes. But there are a lot of other pieces of this collective bargaining agreement that have been preliminarily reported, and there is always the caveat with this that it is preliminary. I haven't seen the actual text. No one has seen the actual text. I mean, at least no one like me. So we can't say what the ramifications of anything or the parts of this that we do not know. I am going to try to be as clear as I can in terms of what we know and what we do not know. But I wanted to run through some of the other parts of this that could theoretically affect the Warriors and how they could. And so one of the most important parts is that this is a 6-year deal with a 7th-year opt-out. So basically the way that that's kind of being interpreted is that there can be a, it will run through the 2022-2023 season. And then in that year, like this year, they could opt out, or it can extend for another season. That kind of seems like what they're doing. That's very good for the Warriors because it means stability for a long time with this. And so the current rules will be in form. And if you agree with my assertion, or at least tentative assertion at the beginning, that this deal is good for the Warriors, and of course I'll give more substance in a little bit, then the longer it's in place, the better. Also, it means a longer time potentially before another lockout or the possibility of lockout. So that's good because this deal was 5+5. And so everybody kind of knew they were going to opt out after 5 just because somebody always thinks there can be better. They did not change the age limit. That doesn't really affect anything. They are shortening the preseason, starting the regular season a week sooner. That is just great for the league because they're still stuck on 82 games. I personally believe they should shorten the season. There are various proposals out there. Mine is everyone should play everyone twice and expand the league a little bit, so play somewhere in the mid-60s as a number of games. Other people have proposed other things. But at least what that does is it gives you another 7 days to stretch out the calendar, so it should reduce back-to-backs. Ideally, with that amount of time, they should be able to eliminate or almost eliminate 4 games in 5 nights. Warriors and Warriors fans will know about that recently because the Warriors just did it. They played 4 games in 5 nights on the trip, LA, Utah, then Memphis, Minnesota, and they won 3 of those games, but it seems like it was very tough physically for them. So that is a win for everybody, really, at this point. And I think it's also good. It could be potentially a little bit more revenue depending on how they structured the national TV deal, because it's another week that you can put on games and get that sort of revenue. Doesn't really affect the local ones at all because they're still playing the same number of games and everything like that. One of the other very interesting pieces, I believe, was originally reported by Mark Stein, is that they are adding in a designated veteran extension. We do not know exactly what this entails, but basically it is a way to pay guys that have been on your team in a way like the rookie extension does, so you get that money. There's a lot that we don't know about it, but basically it looks like they're making the extension system more favorable to a player's current team. And that's a really good thing for the Warriors because they have the team they want. So we don't know yet whether that will extend to somebody like Stephen Curry, because they could theoretically, one of the fun parts of the NBA and any collective bargaining agreement in this space is that they can change the rules on the fly. So when they come to this agreement, they could theoretically change what the structure of the deal is right now. They don't have to wait until July 1st to kick everything in. They can do it earlier if they want to. And if they wanted to, they could say, okay, we're putting in these extension rules right now. And then in that case, somebody like Stephen Curry would be eligible. It sounds like this, the most enhanced version of the extension, is only for guys that meet certain criteria. However, the Warriors might have many guys that meet that criteria. If it involves all NBA appearances, you know, maybe eventually it can get used for Clay or for Draymond, or if it involves MVPs, maybe not now, but maybe eventually it could be used on Kevin Durant. And the reason why Durant is ineligible now is because one of the tenets of it, as a way of rewarding continuity, is it's based on experience with the team. And we don't know how long those terms are. It's another thing we don't know about the new CBA, but it'll be longer than 2 years. So even, I mean, he'll only be on the team 1 year this time, but it will even, I assume, be longer than two, probably. So because the Warriors at that point will only have early bird rights, I'm assuming it will tie to full bird rights and maybe even more. Maybe they'll expand it to something beyond it. But again, we don't know that, so I want to do it. Another huge development for the Warriors, which got a little bit more clarity thanks to Tim Bontemps, friend of Locked On Warriors, is that there was reporting by various people, including David Aldridge, that there were big pay raises for the rookie scale, for the mid-level exception, the biannual exception, and for various other deals. That might not sound like a good thing for the Warriors, but if they are going to function as an over-the-cap team, it is an exceedingly good thing for the Warriors, because what that means is there will be a smaller gap than present between the max salaries or whatever you want to get to and these things like the mid-level exception. And just like the Miami Heat benefited from this calibration, they could too. And what Bontemps shared with this, which is so important, is, and it's something I support personally for all sorts of reasons, and Warriors fans should be very happy about, is that they are going to tie those exceptions to the salary cap. And so they will set basically a line and say, okay, this is how much the mid-level exception is worth, the taxpayer one, the non-taxpayer one, the room mid-level, which is what the Warriors used to get Zaza this year. And then presumably how they will interpret that is that then as the cap moves from year to year because of changes in revenue and everything else, those numbers will change based on that instead of being preset. So they won't get completely out of pace with league salaries or anything else. And if they're going to stay at that level and they're going to be elevated, then that means the Warriors, even if they're getting the taxpayer mid-level every year, which is lower than the full, they will do very well. They will be able to get somebody better for their money than they could in other years, at least at the late years of the CBA. So that's a very good thing for them. They will have more to do that way. And I mentioned this before, but they can theoretically split, if they really had the opportunity, they could split that mid-level exception also among multiple players. So depending on how high they raise it, maybe you get two guys for $2.5 million or something like that instead of getting one guy for five or seven or whatever, wherever it ends up. We'll have to see where it ends up. But it's very exciting. It also is a better piece for team building. So very happy about that and just kind of where everything's going. And I'm also happy it's not a big thing for the Warriors, but I mean, it is for former ones, that they're expanding healthcare for retired players and benefits for current ones. And from what it's kind of sounded like is that part of that money is going to come from owners. So that might be separate from BRI. I think part of it is going to come from the players though, but it's just a good piece of news. And then one that won't affect the Warriors right now, but could affect it later on, is that they are tightening up the restricted free agency rules, making it a little bit more fair. And while the Warriors will not have the money, cap space, presumably, whether they sign Durant with cap space or not, to sign other teams' restricted free agents, they will have their own restricted free agents in the future. And that generally making it more favorable for restricted free agents makes it less favorable for their incumbent team. And it makes it more open to signing an offer sheet. So they're lowering the match time to 2 days. We haven't heard anything on the reporting that they might actually allow restricted free agents to sign during the moratorium, which I personally oppose because I think it's a bad idea unless they fix some stuff in terms of auditing. That part of it is another question that needs to be answered, but we kind of have to see in that way. But for guys like Patrick McCaw, when he hits a restricted free agency, it'll be actually a summer from now because he only got a 2-year deal. And the benefit for the Warriors there is, assuming they keep the arenas provision in the way that they did, there will be limitations on what other teams can offer for McCaw if he is good enough to get that kind of an offer. And we have to wait on that. That is a piece of information that we do not have yet. So overall, we're going to have to see the way that all of this plays out. And there are a lot more details. The luxury tax is a very, very big one that we do not know yet. But if I were to prescribe a takeaway from the limited amount that we know so far, I would say that it's good news for the Warriors. And if you had a feeling in your heart of hearts that $4 million is enough of a sacrifice that Durant is going to be willing to make it, then you can feel even better. If you're skeptical of that, then you're skeptical of that. But really, that's where we are right now. So that took a little longer than I expected, but I still want to go through the basic tenets of buyout mechanics, and then I will go through the longer list of potential players early, but I'll go through the smaller ones, which I think are good illustrations, and my thought process on how buyouts work. In effect, if a player is waived before March 1st, they're able to participate in the playoffs for another team. So that's why that is the deadline for so many guys, because especially if they want to come to the Warriors, they want to be able to play in the playoffs. So you think about a lot of things through that lens of late February or so. And the most important characteristics of any buyout candidate are that they have no future value to their current team, and ideally, but not required, that they have no or little present value to their team. We'll start with future value. That means that either a player is on a contract that they're going to cut, or that they're not coming back. So the best example of this in recent times is a guy who was a high-end buyout candidate, Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson was not going to go back to that terrible Nets team. So Brooklyn did not have any future value in him. They were going to lose him. He was going to sign somewhere else, and he was unrestricted, so they weren't going to get compensation. There wasn't going to be anything like that. They didn't have any match rights, so they had no future. They had no future value for him. Players that might be open to re-signing typically don't get bought out. Players that are going to be a restricted free agent only get bought out when they're basically being cut. It's just another way of being cut. And so that really does narrow the pool, because a lot of good players aren't going to get bought out because they provide some future value. And even in some tangential cases, it could be something small as they have a reasonable cap hold. Omri Caspi might not be happy with the Sacramento Kings. There have been some reporting that he'll be available for trades and all that kind of stuff. The Kings aren't going to buy him out unless he leaves a bunch of money on the table, because there's a possibility that he resigns there. It could change if that situation gets even worse with time. Maybe that changes. But also, it's more likely if it gets so bad that he's not going to resign and it's a good player, that they'll just trade him for some sort of value beforehand, because not only is it doing right by the player and making sure that a powerful player agent, I don't know who Caspi's agent is, but just in general, agents are powerful, doesn't hate you. Because if you keep a guy in a bad situation and he's going to be a free agent, you're basically just curtailing his present and maybe to a point his future. It's not really that popular. So there are some kind of large scale effects at play there. And if he gets traded, presumably it would be to a team that wants to keep him. So you're not usually looking at the best guys. The only exception to that is when a player is basically has an untradeable contract, so then that option is off the table. And especially if a player is willing to leave money on the table. And that's what happened with Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson did provide the Nets with present value. He was a good basketball player. Losing him made them a worse team. But he basically paid off that present value with money. And so the Nets got money off of his contract. And that ended up being a very good decision for Joe Johnson, because he parlayed a more successful run with the Miami Heat when he got bought out, because they had just dealt with the Chris Bosh thing. So there were more minutes, more touches, more shots for him, into a pretty sizable contract with the Utah Jazz, 2-year deal. So that really is the model. If you want to be an optimist about what the Warriors can do with a buyout candidate, look at Joe Johnson. But this year is really different with that, just because so many teams are competitive and because the worst teams don't really have those contracts that it's the last year or anything like that. And I've had people ask me about, what about if the Suns bought out Tyson Chandler? They're not going to buy out Tyson Chandler. He has, I believe, 3 years left on his deal. You just don't see that happening. And the only exception to that would be something like Larry Sanders, where Sanders left a ton of money on the table and he hasn't even come back to the league yet. So you shouldn't really use that as a positive example of a guy leaving a lot of money on the table and then playing for a new team, because Larry Sanders still hasn't. So the basic terms that you're looking for are a player who doesn't have much in the way of future value to that team, either that they're not going to re-sign him or anything like that, and that is in a situation where their present value doesn't matter. Because if a player is providing no present value because they aren't a good basketball player, then the Warriors should not be looking at signing them as a buyout candidate, especially since they're going to have to cut somebody on their current team. That's why the list of... I'm going to talk about two groups today, and I'll lay out what the third group is. Actually, maybe I'll do the fourth one because the third group is so big. Group one is where there's a reasonable chance. And a reasonable chance is that team probably isn't going anywhere. That player probably won't get traded. And there's a cogent theory for why they would be interested in a buyout. And none of these names are super sexy. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do here, is be realistic and explain why. The three guys that I have in the reasonable chance group are Randy Foy of the Brooklyn Nets, Jose Calderon of the LA Lakers, and Brandon Rush, former Warrior, of the Minnesota Timberwolves. The reasoning behind that, all three of those teams aren't very good. The Nets actually just beat the Lakers tonight. The Wolves are better. They could get up there, but Rush isn't a huge part of the rotation. None of them have much future value. Rush and Foy both signed deals this year, which means they're non-birds, so that their current teams don't really have much of an advantage to re-signing them. They're going to be unrestricted free agents. And with Calderon, he's already kind of buried on their team. They have D'Angelo Russell, who's their point guard of the present and future. They have Marcelo Huertas, who is already under contract for next year. And and the Lakers basically got him through a series of transactions. Chicago picked him up in the Robin Lopez trade as a salary cap dump. So they don't have this investment in him saying we're going to do that. So present value for all three of those guys is pretty limited, especially considering the Nets don't own their pick. So you even don't have that benefit. The Lakers probably won't own their own pick either, because it's probably going to the Philadelphia 76ers. So those three guys are there. None of them fill a particular position of need. I actually think Randy Foy would be a very useful player for the Warriors if he were on the market. And depending on what he wants to do, Cleveland might be a better fit for him, because he can do similar to what his job was in Oklahoma City last year, which was defend point guards and not run the offense. And he did that because they had Kevin Durant. The actual job that he had on that team was to play the one when Kevin Durant was on the floor. And that works with LeBron. It also theoretically could work with Durant, but the Cavs have a more open chasm at that kind of a niche compared to the Warriors, because the Warriors have Steph and Sean Livingston. So Foy is the most interesting there. Foy is also more of kind of a cold-hearted asset play. I would consider him a better fit for the 14th man than the 15th. And that would mean maybe that you're getting two guys, getting somebody who's more of a need play. If you could get a center, it would be great. So that would mean probably cutting McAdoo and Varejao. I honestly don't expect that to happen. It's possible. I'm not going to say it's impossible or anything like that. Group two are better players. And the classification there is not now, but if they get moved. And so their current teams probably don't have the circumstances to make that the right decision, but they could get traded, likely for these two guys, as a part of a bigger deal. And if they were a part of a bigger deal, maybe that new team would be kind of using them as cap filler to get somebody else. And those two guys are Jordan Hill, who is now on the Timberwolves, and PJ Tucker of the Suns. PJ Tucker is having a hell of a year. If he got on the market, it would be awesome. He actually probably would get more money than the Warriors could offer, because there are teams that have the mid-level exception. That's exactly why the Suns would keep him if they can. And he's been on the team for a while. I haven't heard anything definitive of, oh, he wants to be somewhere else. However, it's possible if they made a bigger trade, and the reason why the Suns are included is because they could move Brandon Knight, they could move Eric Bledsoe, they could, you know, do a whole bunch of different things, and maybe in one of those they need his numbers to make the math work, and maybe that team is less involved in PJ Tucker, or maybe even they're more hopeless or in the same level of hopelessness as the Suns, but he doesn't have the connection with the organization. Jordan Hill is less good. But Jordan Hill is also better than Anderson Varejao and James Michael McAdoo. So it's a possibility. He signed with the Timberwolves this year. They're not playing him as much. I don't know if he's been hurt, but either way, if he wanted to play in the playoffs, that probably isn't going to happen in Minnesota despite their nice win in Chicago last night. But at the same point, So that's why he's like not now, but if they got moved, because if he went to a team that was less invested, maybe he'd ask for that. And he actually has I believe it's a non-guaranteed contract for next year. There will be an outside chance if he got bought out that somebody would claim him. And that's a good thing to know with the buyout is always contingent on nobody claiming you on waivers. In situations like Joe Johnson's, that didn't matter because no one was going to claim him off waivers. But with some of the players on reasonable deals, some would argue Jordan Hill is there. There's an outside chance that a team with cap space or an exception. And that's a good thing to know also is that if you can fit the player fully within a trade exception, not the middle level or anything like that, but a trade exception like the one Cleveland has, they can just claim that guy using that money as long as it fits all the other rules and they're fine. And that could happen. We don't really know. But because basically what that is it's a trade, but just the other team didn't know it was a trade until it happened. And they're also, a lot of the trade exceptions like Cleveland's are expiring at the trade deadline, not at the cut deadline. So there's a possibility that they could fall through now, even if he wouldn't then. And so we have to work through all that. The third group, which I'm not going to talk about now because it's so many guys, is the way I classify it as unlikely but possible. So it's players who I wouldn't expect it to happen, but they would be on my radar for various reasons, either that their team is not competitive or that they don't necessarily fit. And the thing to remember with that is also that the better players on that list, when I get to it in a future episode, probably next week, those players are probably going to make that for a reason. But if one of them took a big pay cut, that could be the way to do it. So I'm not going to go through that list now. Then the last one, what is group four, and I consider it the lowest of the lists for a reason for the Warriors, is Flyers. So a Flyer is a player who is in the league right now, but is more fringy, usually on the younger side, but maybe the Warriors would want to give them a tryout, maybe on a 10-day contract or something, as opposed to some of the other guys. And the three that stood out to me there were James Young, Tyler Ennis, and Thomas Robinson. So James Young beat out RJ Hunter for the last spot on the Celtics, but the Celtics declined his option, meaning that he will be an unrestricted free agent. There is a limitation in terms of how much they can pay him, but I don't know what his market is going to be. So that's interesting to watch. If for whatever reason the Celtics got somebody through a buyout, Young would be a likely guy to get cut in that case. If the Warriors liked him better than the players they have, they could pick him up. Tyler Ennis is basically the same thing. Rockets traded Michael Beasley for him, declined his option, probably won't bring him back. He'll be an unrestricted free agent. If the Warriors wanted to try him out as a third point guard, he didn't play particularly well for the Rockets. They could do that. Thomas Robinson is just an unrestricted free agent, was a highly touted draft pick a few years ago by the Kings, bounced around the league a whole bunch of times, now is with the Lakers. If the Lakers decided he wasn't for them, they could cut him, but the Lakers deciding he wasn't for them would probably be the exact type of non-ringing endorsement that the Warriors would not be looking for. They're looking for somebody a little bit better. But I wanted to mention those guys because it is potentially interesting, and they're more 10-day contract guys, whereas the ones at the top, those would be more rest-of-the-season type players. So those are the smaller groups. The big group of like, oh, it could be possible, I'll talk about them in a future episode. It's also changing really fast because we're seeing a couple of teams getting closer to falling out. And as the West playoff picture, if it becomes more clear over the next 20 games and more teams fall out of contention, then that opens up potential buyout candidates because players on playoff teams really aren't going to get bought out very much because their teams are good and they're going to have expectations. But if your team is a little bit more hopeless, the player will want to get out more to raise their profile, and the team would be more amenable to it because why the heck not? So that's this episode. Two disparate ideas that are both connected to the collective bargaining agreement. If you have any feedback, good, bad, indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com, Twitter @DannyLarue, LEROUX. And yeah, it's fun to do this. Tomorrow's episode will be about the Knicks game. Might be one of the first times I record it in the morning. There's an outside chance, depending. I'm doing it with Jared Dubin, who does Locked On Knicks, one of my friends. And because he's on the East Coast and I don't get home until late, I don't know if we're going to record it that night or early in the morning, but it should be up before the morning commute. That is at least my target. So I appreciate all the support, everybody listening, and hopefully this satiates you. I try to be super cautious with CBA stuff when we don't know all the details. Once I get an actual copy of the CBA, I'll be a house of fire in terms of reading it through, and once I have a handle on it, conveying that to all of you. But when we're in this strange land where we don't know a lot of things for sure. I want to be cautious about it and want to say, you know, kind of where we are and where we are not. And so I hope you appreciated that. And I hope you use that judiciousness when you're sharing the insight you glean from this and anything else with your friends, your colleagues, your basketball conversants, whatever. And that's an important part of this. I appreciate you and everyone doing what they can to support the show. Subscribe, download every episode with this and every other podcast that you like. Leave a rating, leave a review, tell your friends, tell people you think would enjoy it. That is great. If you also want to read my writing, you can check out The Athletic. Going to be doing some CBA stuff, more when the deal comes out for Real GM and, of course, for the sporting news. And if you want to have a little bit more of a frame of reference on the Durant stuff I talked about earlier, I wrote a piece for the Sporting News back in October about what the revised estimate did. And the real big difference between that piece and now is that the amount of the disparity went from being 1.7 million to 4.15 now, from what the basic part that we might know. But really, other than that, the fundamentals are pretty much the same with that story. And that's why I think overall what happened today was good news for the Warriors. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.